David and Carol were telling me that some of the summer cumbers here were, didn't really know what we were in for. So, well, that's true, isn't it? Is it so?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
True.
No idea what we're in for,
right.
Which is quite challenging, isn't it? Very brave of you, brave years come. Well, I don't think I know what we're in for, really, because I find that on these occasions I don't come to them with a, or I shouldn't come to them, I don't think I do come to them with a lot of ideas. I just have to go myself into all the questions, you know, and I don't have anything to lay on you. I don't have kind of nothing to indoctrinate you with or give to you. I suppose what I'm up to on these occasions is to just be rather especially truthful to myself about what I am, what I find myself to be, and to share with you this way of perhaps being ourselves, you know. And it seems to me that in my life, I took everybody's word for what I am, you know. I let everybody, naturally, I think we all do, we let everybody lay things on us and tell us what they like and intimidate us, really. And the last thing I want to do, and David and Cal want to, I'm sure, is to add to the sorry story of intimidation by laying our thing on you. You know, it's really quite reverse of that. So I think I have to start off by saying you are the authority on the subject and I'm not. And really, I suppose you, only you, in a position to say who you are, what you are, for yourself at this time. And so this is kind of unteaching, unlearning, coming to be, have the courage and confidence to take what we find for ourselves, have a look at what we are for ourselves. You know? So you're this, Archie, this evening, I'm not. You're the authority on you, I'm not. But we should be asking questions and directing your attention to different ways of looking at yourself. But you're the authority and I'm not. And I'm the authority on one thing, and that's what's sitting in my chair. And you're the authority what's sitting on your cushion, not in your chair. And this is what we're going to address ourselves to. Perhaps ask some fundamental questions which we assume the answers to. We go a little further back in examining our fundamental somethingness. And I think the proposition is that we may have been told things that are not true about ourselves and things which could really damage us. So in my case, I believe what I was told, and I find what I was told about Douglas here is not true. And I don't mean in psychologically, in a very subtle ways, and you know, spiritual and intellectual and psychological, deep, you know, complex things. I'm talking about very ordinary, and this childishly simple things. I was told about myself here, and I found it just not true. And I'm going to address ask you, perhaps, if you were to look at where you are and see what you find. And what you genuinely find there is wrong. Then I can't tell you, but I can ask you what it's like where you are. Well, why should we have a fresh look at what's where we are this time? What we are. But I don't know what your motivation might be to work on this. See? First of all, it does seem to me rather pity to have happened. We had, by each of us, it happened. It's rather peculiar, isn't it? I find it rather peculiar and rather special. You know, we needn't have happened. Is it a kind of great opportunity? And it seems to me that most of us happen and then we unhappen and we never ask what happened. We're so busy living, the life of what we're told we are, we never look and see what it really is. And we take everybody's word, but our own word for what it's like where we are. Repeat that for my own benefit. I take everybody's word, if I'm not careful, I take everybody's word for what it's like here sitting in a chair, but my own word. Because I've just lost confidence in my own authority. And I let people lay things on me which are not true. And that's, boy, my young life got me into deep trouble. And I have a great job, getting rid of this load of stuff laid on me here, which I find not to be true. And it's always simple stuff, very basic stuff. Not psychological stuff, not really kind of deep stuff in a way, but very basic, simple stuff. I found it's not true. And I think, so my motivation is to tell the truth about this, partly because it seems a pity not to have a go. I mean, to live and die without asking who's doing that seems chicken-hearted and unimposing. Fine, I'd say that. And, it's the spirit of adventure, Shirley says, well, is sometimes to be adventure on lies, isn't it? What adventure matches the adventure, let's say. I'm going to look for myself. I'm not going to take anybody's word for this. I'm going to really have a go and look at myself, for myself, now, without prejudice, starting all over again, in case I've been conned. Now, that's an adventure. I think that's a worthwhile adventure. And the second motive is, see, I do think that if I make mistakes and believe lies about things out in the world, that might be nasty and might keep me into trouble and would. I mean, if I believed the signs on the freeway here were the opposite of what they were, I might get creamed. But that wouldn't be so, it would be perhaps awkward, but I think if I'm wrong about what's at the centre of my knowledge, right at the centre, what's really here, not right down the freeway or out there in my life, if I'm wrong about what's at the centre, I'm really wrong, I'm in really deep trouble. I'd better get the centre right. What I'm living out of, it seems to me I need to get right. And so that's what, with your agreement, we could address ourselves to this evening. Have a fresh look at what we're looking out of. I mean, we can see what we're looking at. You're looking at Dagos, I'm looking at you. About what we're looking out of. And we've been told what we're looking out of. So the first motive might be that curiosity. And the second might be, it would seem very efficient to live from above all the central life. That I've got wrong what I am, and I'm living from what I'm not. I'm living from a lie, and I think that would not work. And I think the third motive might be all the great ones that I acknowledge, really great ones, have said that right where I am is treasure. The real treasure is never either. The real treasure, the real key, the real refuge, the real peace, even the real joy. Because satisfaction is really where I am. I'm not out there. It's right here, the core of my being. There's some perfect jewel, I don't know, some mystery, some reality there, which is my heart's desire. They say so, but I don't say believe it. But it's the motivation for having a new look, isn't it? What it might be there. There are some reasons for feeling. I don't know if there came up to be more reasons, so probably lost.
Yeah, I think you get into trouble with problems in your mind. And problems force you to look at life in a new way, and you look at yourself in a new way. Mm-hmm. So I think difficulties can, personal problems or whatever, can make you look at who's having them.
So hopefully if some of us have a problem, I mean, it's really helpful if we have. Because that gives us a real motivation. I think people that have no problems, or at least they think they don't have problems, have not. Their life is going fairly well, but it's a great thing if you have a few problems, I think. Very encouraging. Mm-hmm. Motivating. Cool. And what I think we would like to do with you this evening is not talk mainly, but two little simple experiments aimed at starting all over again. and looking at what's right where we are. And we talk about treasure. I mean, I talk about the treasure, the wonderful thing here, and all that. I have to undo that a bit by saying that we, you know, what the great ones say is that there is indeed a treasure we want, but, and they say it's absolutely instantly available, some of them do, but what we're after tonight and what they would warn us to expect is not a mystical experience. We're not going to blow our tops and in a mystical experience have a wonderful experience of love and joy and all that. It's not a peak experience, this is alleged to be, but kind of more like a valley experience, I'd say. Kind of passionately peaceful, but quiet, and some people, authorities, the subject of time is grey and down to us and matter of fact, but very accessible, being clever and very intellectual and about it is great, I think, real handicap. The qualification we need for this is that we really accept simplicity and childlikeness, you know? And if we're clever, this is, I think, makes it real difficulty. It makes for real difficulty. So, for all these reasons and so on, it seems a good thing to have a look. And that really means dropping opinions about ourselves. We have some language and we have some parents, teachers, dropping just not for long, you know, just momentarily enough to have a new look at what's where we are. And the experiments, these are what I think convince, not the words. The words are kind of froth or setting for the experiments. Well, what we could do is to just, in all simplicity and childlikeness, shall we say, we could look round the room now at this time, if we are circular. If we could, would you mind doing something very childish with me, really? I mean, we could count, doing your counting thing, and count what we can see, not what we think we see. Count what we see, not what we think we see. And how many bods are there in the room? I'm talking about this. And how many are in the room? Can we just count and see how many there are? And see what our score is? How many do we get?
11.
11. We find 11 bods in the room. And we can actually see what we're pointing at. I think we just make absolutely sure, could we point as we do it, and just point at what we find. Yeah, and so we can actually count 11 and go around and make quite sure. So 11. On present evidence, dropping memory, dropping imagination, 11 bodies. Okay, well, now that's what happened in the faces in the room on present evidence. Now, on present evidence, how many? Please, could you point as you go around? Well, what's his call this time? 11. Well, let's do it again. Be really careful about this. Shall we begin with the person on our left? So we begin with the person on the left and end with the person here. Now, could you keep pointing at this place? Is this the 11th face that you're pointing at? What is your finger pointing at? Mm-hmm. On present evidence, what is your finger pointing at? Ah, don't look at me. Look at your finger, please. Please look at your finger. Look at your finger and look at what your finger is pointing at. No, well, just look at your finger, and we all look at our fingers, and honestly take what we get now, and see what our finger is pointing at.
And we can see the tip of my finger.
Is that all?
I see my hand and my arm.
You see your hand, your arm. Where's your face?
I can't see my finger.
Oh,
yeah.
You
let me see your face?
You don't see how to see it.
Sorry?
You didn't say how to see it. You said on present evidence.
On present evidence. Well, what is your...
In the way I interpret present evidence, is something that doesn't mean you have to see it. You can be a blind person.
No, but I was asking...
What do you see?
On present evidence, what is your finger pointing at? On present evidence, without thinking, without imagination, what is your finger pointing at? Look and see. Don't look at me, please. Just look at what your finger is pointing at. On present evidence, what is it pointing at? I mean, drop thinking and imagination. Nothing, yeah. Well, what to me, I'd like some other feedback. Yeah. Yours are pointing at nothing.
Pointing at my nose.
You might, yes, and what's behind the nose? Look and see.
Nothing.
What's the nose resting on?
I can see my cheeks.
You
can't
like
see
it.
Anything else.
Can't see anything else.
No. Good.
We could go around and just give a little report of what we find. And the question is, on present evidence, what is your finger pointing at? Don't really, just look at the finger. What is it pointing at? Don't worry about other people, just our own experience at this time. Well, I'm doing, you know, on present evidence, is it pointing at something?
Me, it, the finger's part of the body.
No, what's it pointing at on present evidence?
There's a catch to this present evidence. It's a catchphrase, which I don't know what you mean, to present evidence. I know that there's me behind this.
And
you know,
what color is me?
What? Me is not a color.
No. Well, how many eyes has me got that?
Two.
On present evidence?
I think you have present evidence, so it's the catchphrase. It's like you can't see your eyebrows, but you know they're there. Right? We know we have two eyes.
No, we're not asking about what we know. You see, we're not asking about what we know. We're asking about what we can find at this moment.
Two eyes.
You can. Okay, well, let's try that one.
That you have two eyes.
Let's try
you
that.
You could put your fingers in your eyes. And you
well, you can look through both of your eyes and know that they're both there.
We don't have any evidence. By just looking at our finger, we have no evidence.
You touch your face.
Oh, wait a minute. We'll do that in a moment. Oh. But we got the eyes, so we'll go straight to the eyes, I think. And would you do an experiment with me? Because it's rather important to be right about this. And you said you know you're looking out of two eyes now. So let us see what we find on present evidence. And if we have glasses, which most of us don't have, but we those who have, well, you and I, take our glasses off and hold them there. And those who don't have glasses, could we make an artificial pair like that and hold them out there? And look at the two lenses. Don't look at me. Look at the two apertures there, out there. Now, there are two, aren't there? No doubt, on present evidence, by which I mean what is getting an intense experience of the struggle. You can see two apertures. Now slowly put them on, right on, slowly, and watch what's happening to them. And when you've got them right on, lower your hands. Now, in your own experience now, your own naive experience, how many eyes are looking at you? Well, you're the authority. I cannot tell you wrong. Do you permit me in your place? Without thinking about it.
Two.
Two? Really? Well, could we try again and make sure? Make sure. Now, look at the two windows there. out there and watch what happens as you bring them on slowly. But do they remain two, or do they, something happen?
They become one.
They become one. So here we have a different story. So something strange is going on here.
Well, I have a problem with that because the visual analog of my eyes is big, and what I see in one of them.
Well, do you still...
I do have a sense of not... I have a sense of looking out of my right eye, and the other eye is just sort of not really looking at anything. It's just sort of there along for the ride. And I really do have a sense of looking through two eyes, although I only see one image.
Yes.
I really feel like I'm looking through two eyes.
I think what we're talking about this time is a kind of window. Are there two windows in your own experience? Well, you said there are two windows, or you were saying, no, it's not two, perhaps it's one. Now, in your case, there are two windows you're looking out of, so to speak. Yes?
Two windows. And one is dirty and the other is...
Are you sure you can count two? If you've been born at this moment, or may, or, you know, came out of outer space into this body now, would you know how many eyes you were looking out of? On present evidence?
Well, see, that's not present. I'm not trying to fight your idea, but my present evidence, the way I look at things now, is affected by what I've experienced in the past.
Oh, no. We're asking you, what is your present evidence at this time?
My present evidence at this time is that I'm looking through two eyes.
Well, that's because that's yours.
Yeah.
That's
it for me.
Well, that's interesting because we have one eye here. We have two eyes here. We have
no
eyes here. So we've got three answers already. Isn't that interesting? And in your experience now, your own experience now, how many?
Two.
Two. You got two as you put this on.
Well, when I put these on?
Yeah.
Having worn glasses before, I would think that I had four.
Mm-hmm. Would you?
Yeah, because I know that when I take them off, I
No, the question is, on present, well, how many can you count now at this moment?
I can't count any at this on because I can't see them anymore.
Well, that's it.
And none.
That one, they're not there. None. None on present.
I can see, but I know once I take my hands away.
Yeah, the question is not how many we know there. The question is how many we can find there now. And that is the question.
How many eyes can I see?
Can you
feel?
How many?
Do I feel?
No. How many eyes in your own experience now are you looking out of?
Two.
Dropping memory.
Dropping memory?
On present evidence at this time. Look.
Look, well, when I look, it feels that I'm looking through one.
Well, now that we got that answer. And you got that answer, you got one, or none was it here? No, you were none. And we got two here.
One.
One.
For me, it sort of seems like it changes for how closely I look at it. When you say present evidence, so sometimes I'll just take it for granted, and then there's a whole vision. But I look at it more closely, which is also can be present evidence, and I notice that there are two things.
Well, you're the authority. It's not for me to argue.
Yeah.
I can't say you're the authority, and then I say I'm the authority. You're the authority, and you must stick to your what you find, which I respect. I really do. I might be a little surprised, but I respect it.
None at all.
Not
I only see what's out there. And see it from anything. Right?
And what I suggest is that we could do what Carol indicated. Carol, could you give us a clue about what to do here? Tell us what to do now.
Okay, try to frame what you're seeing. Like as far as your world, what it is, until you don't see your edges.
Till your hands and arms just disappear, yes? Just go off the edge of the picture. Now, is this not like a large window or something?
Yeah, this is my eye.
And is there any kind of division in the middle at this moment? Look at your own window that you're looking out of. Is there a division down the middle of any kind in making it two windows?
The bridge of my nose.
No, we're asking you on.
Yes, there is.
There is.
It's a physical thing I can see. And on one side it's cloudy, and the other side it's.
Ah, we're not asking about the scene, the cloudy scene on one side and the clear scene on another. We're asking whether the window where you are has got a division in the middle. So that it's a window with two windows, in fact.
Well, there is a division. It's very close to my eyes, but there is a, yes.
So you are looking out at the world out of two windows, so to speak.
It's a continuous vision, but there's a place where it changes.
There's a line somewhere?
Yeah, right in my nose where this eye can't see anymore.
Well? What do we find here?
Well, I can understand what he's saying, because if I'm missing a lens, I'm
kind of... Oh, no, the question is not what we're missing. That's speculation, you see. We're asking what you is like for you at this time, if you're really honest about it.
It's as if there's just one. There's no...
Well, now, that's interesting. That's interesting. So we're getting the story one, none, and two. We're getting three stories, which is very interesting. And I haven't said mine yet, have I? I don't think I... I would not call it one, really. I'd agree. You could call it one, I could call it none, couldn't you? And it's a huge window without division. Now, isn't that strange that this is... We've all been living from this. We've all been living our lives looking out. And the fact that there should be a disagreement about this is incredible, really, isn't it? It shows that perhaps this is a neglected country. That we hadn't noticed this.
I think the basic premise is faulty. When someone says they see it of two eyes, it doesn't mean they're seeing two different things. You could see it of six eyes and see only one thing.
The question is not what you see, it's what you're looking out of. And you're the authority on what you're looking out of. It's a question, it's not a premise. And the question is, and you're the authority, how many eyes, or how many apertures, how many windows are you looking out of? In your own experience at this time. And if you say two, well, we have to say it, you know, the authority, don't we? I'm a little bit surprised, but you know, I have to agree that you're the authority. I tell you a story, a kind of thing that happens to me quite often. I remember in England, I was doing a workshop with about 60 people in London. Middle-aged ladies mostly, and they're very nice, sweet people. And I said to them, before we start this thing, now, are you agreed that all of you in your own experience, that's tricky, of course, I said, are you agreed that all of you in...
There was a break here in the recording between side one of the tape and side two.
So the whole 50 or 60 of them had changed their view of what it was like where they are, which seemed to me to indicate that we, including me, you know, it's one unknown country. And that is the country we're here, the near country, this place we're at. But we're really unconscious of it. There's 60 people all thought that they were looking in their own experience out two holes in a wheat ball, two little holes in a wheat ball. And when they looked, why, it's this huge great window. Now, something very strange going on, isn't it? That we could so change our view. And it seems to me that we are interested in everything, we look at everything out there, but what we're looking out of this country, like forbidden country, really, that we're unaware of. And it seems to me to be, in my case, my trouble, that I'm unaware of what it's like being me here. It's about simple question. See, it's not about the world that you see. It's not about thinking and ideas. It's about a very simple question. A very direct and simple question. Are you looking out at the world all the time in your life? Are you looking out at two rather small windows in a solid object? Or is it much more like a huge great window where you are? And that's a big question. And to get the answer right seems to me to change, you know, to determine what kind of life one's living. I think it's a very vital question. And I do suggest that this is a place which goes largely unexamined in our lives. The question is, what are we looking out on? And only you know that. I can't tell you what you're looking out of. Only you can tell you. The question is, are you looking out of something, some solid object through two apertures? Or is it just like a great big, huge, open, empty window where you are without edges? That's the question. And on that hangs a great deal. That's the question. I think my help here is, you might sound a bit kind of crazy perhaps, but may I suggest we do something that would help establish whether we're crazy or not? And which we may be. Who knows? We may be. And you were saying...
I'm sure this symbology or some index.
Well, look, let's do a little experiment here, not talk about it. Well, so you said that... On present tense, right there, it was no, I know, well, nothing. Then, do you mean that, or you know, kind of empty that, or what did you mean?
When I was pointing.
Well, now, all right. What's my finger pointing at there? On present tense.
And present tense, nothing.
Right. She says that on present evidence, my finger's pointing at nothing. Susie says that. Now we see a face there. We see eyes there. She says there's nothing there. Now, we have a little experiment here, I think, to test whether she's being truthful or whether she's lying. Whether she's crazy or we're crazy. We can't both be right. We say there's something there and she says there isn't.
Why can't we both be right?
Well, let's see whether we can both be right. But I don't see how, at the moment, we could both be right about there. Because there either is something or nothing. Now, we'll test this. I mean, we don't talk about it, we test it. You know, we can discuss these things endlessly. The great thing is to test it. And if I had a camera, this would be the best way of doing it, because cameras are rather specially truthful. Human beings being very reliable. But I don't have a camera, but I do have a kind of pretense camera here. Polaroid can you see? And I think we'll call that place X, not Susie, because then that doesn't presume anything. It's a mystery. We don't know what it is yet. The question is it something or is it nothing? See, X, is X something or is it nothing? Is it a lady's face or is it space, which she seems to suggest? Well, starting from here, we're a long way away, so we don't know yet what it's like there, do we? But we'll try to find out, with the aid of our camera, what it's like here. What X reveals itself to be at this place? Y, 9 feet from X. Now, I'm taking a little photo here, and with my Polaroid camera, and I've got the whole young lady here, and it cooks, photograph cooks and gloves, and here's a photograph, a lady, a whole lady. And we put it on the floor, here, because obviously in this region, X reveals itself to be a whole lady. But you see, we're not 9 feet away from the issue, and about 9 feet, 10 feet away from X, you see. So we have to look in this mass of fluid. And here, somewhere here, I promise you, we have half a lady, and only the top half. And I take a photo, and it cooks, and I put it on the floor, because this is a region where we have half the lady. And we could go to this in the laboratory, do we have a mirror here handy?
Yes, right there.
Yeah, thanks so much. Great. You keep that for a moment. Yes. Now, we're still a long way from X, you see, so we have to creep up. Okay, so now we have a photograph, a face. So this is the region infected by or haunted by the face of it, a face. X here reads as a face. We put the photograph. Yeah. Now, where does X find that face herself? Tell me when you have you found the face there?
Mm-hmm.
So you find it here,
mm-hmm.
and the camera finds it here, and I find it here. So mirror, it's in the mirror. It's in me. It's in the camera. That's interesting, isn't it? That's triple confirmation. Right. Oh, it's still got a long way to go. Thank you. Still got a long way to go. Excuse me. well, necessarily. Well, I come from there, and now I've got an eye or a nose. I take another photograph when I just around get back here. See? Now, alas, we don't have to fit to our cameras some riding the mildest lenses and microscopes and micro-microscopes and so on. But if from here to there we could fit the right instruments, well, I think we should take actual photographs. I know we would, of tissues, cells, even molecules, under certain circumstances, even atoms. But still not there. Now I'm going to leap over the whole darn lot and tell you what I get right here in my camera and me. I promise you, there's nothing whatever. It's nothing whatever. And when I turn round, instead of looking in at X, I look out with X. Why? I get, if we could just put our heads together, see? Why? You get the scene, don't you? So I guessed that X was truthful. I think that she was a true, she told the true story. Don't you think?
That it went up to nothing.
I went up to nothing.
I
lost her on the way up. And what she said was that she found nothing here. But if you look out and you see that nothing, it's full of the whole scene, isn't it? So she's truthful. And you see, this is not only, we may think this is a special treatment we have for faeces. No, the general proposition supporting Susie there is that whatever you go up to, why don't you lose it in the process? If I go up to those wonderful flowers, I mean, I had a wonderful flower, say, here. But I go up with my camera to the flowers and I get, why, the whole plant and the flower and the petal, patch of cells, molecules, atoms, at the point of contact gone. The question of where is the flower? The flower is in us here, isn't it? It's not over there, because when I go over there, I lose it. And X, Susie, aren't you, Susie, in your own experience, you've lost your head and gained the world, really, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
At this time. Isn't that a good business? Isn't that a good, nice thing to do? Isn't it a beautiful thing to do? And you're no longer separated from us and from what you're out of your box, which you never were in, perhaps. And it can make all the difference in our personal relationships, in our relationship with nature, the world. No separation now. Because you're not stuck in that little meatball looking through two little windows, are you? You're already at large now. So this is a pretty important question to settle. Are we separated from the world by being things, or are we in our own experience, no thing, and room for the whole world to happen in? And the question is, when we were very little, what were we like? Those of us who have experience of children, what are they like? Isn't this our experience of ourselves when we were little? Hadn't we just bought, really, this thing that was laid on us? And what was laid on me is, they told me, Douglas, you are what you look like. You are here, where you are, what you look like to us, but 6 feet. Now, I'm not, you know. I'm not. I'm quite different. You see an old man with a wide beard and solid lump here. That wide beard is your problem. Well, it is. It ain't here. Look what's here. You. And Susie, aren't you and I trading faces at this time? Mm-hmm. Which training is not a ritual thing to do, it's a courteous thing to do. It's quite a loving thing to do, a natural thing to do.
I mean,
that's very nice indeed. You've got you're enjoying your beer,
though.
Bearded lady. Well, mind, it's not quite. Well, I still think that we must respect each other's view of things, and we don't want to we really don't want to bully anyone into having this view of things, but. I would say that you are the authority on you, I'm the authority on me. All I'm in a position to say is what it's like here. And I would say that I just enjoy not being an old man with a white beard here, but being you, you know, having your face much better. Takes years off me. It's a loving, natural thing to do, to have your face now. And look, if my face went bright blue, whose problem would that be? I guess yours, not mine. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know, would I? And it seems to me that perhaps we think we've got something here special to faces and special to people, but it does take the heat off it, make it so natural when we see that when we go out to anything, we lose it. It's distance that makes things what they are. I go up to the flowers, I lose them. I go up to you, I lose you. Go up to Susie, I lose her. Now, I went up to myself and lost myself. And that's nice, because I get the whole world in exchange. I lose a head and I go outside here and I get perhaps 1,000,000,000 stars in my space. And that's where the other thing happened.
The comment you were asking about, well, I can feel my face here, right?
Yes.
So let's try it.
With our eyes open, let's try and build the box now. See if we can get it in position and then move in. Get that small box in position and then kind of move in. Are you still at large or have you managed to build a box for getting in?
Is it dark in there? Dark and stuffy?
We call it gushy.
You know, when we were very little, children, you must know that children come to my house, they look in the mirror and they don't say, that's me, that's baby. And I had a little girl come to my house and she pointed to her reflection in the mirror and she said, has that little girl got a mummy too? And another little girl sent to the bathroom to wash her dirty face. Start washing your dirty face in your mirror. Well, when we are little children, we are faceless, aren't we? Really, we are. And we are at large. And I think this is the charm of little children, that they're not in a box. And when the price of belonging to the cloud, of course, society, is that you get put in our boxes. And it seems to me adventure is a big hell, really. Because it's separation. And what do we suffer from separation, the hell of being separate from each other? Whereas in fact we are busted wide open to each other, aren't we? I'm room for you to happen in. And that's a very special, very natural bubbly thing. And not only you, but how willing you. And I think, the great one said, you won't find this until you become like little children. I mean, one person you've heard of, Mira, said, the kingdom of heaven is within you, and you will find it when you become like little children.